Rex Latchford back with another day page. Here's a look at today's newspapers. Today's Times here in New York has an editorial from the editorial board, ever slow to speak, titled Politicians for Sale, begging the question, is it really a newspaper? But I jest. Wall Street doesn't seem too worried about the U.S. defaulting on its debt despite the looming deadline. Let's hope they're right as the Congress and Senate continue to jack us around to the tune of $100 million a day, soon reaching the billion mark. How do you feel about paying for that while those clowns prance and primp for the cameras? Well, speaking of primping for the cameras, White House Press Secretary Jay Carney said yesterday that the 14th Amendment, which states the validity of the public debt of the United States, authorized by law, is sacrosanct and shall not be questioned. And Carney is saying it's not grounds for presidential intervention. But with the disapproval the Republicans in Congress are getting for their trash and burn rampage that's running the government debt meter off the hook, and with Obama's relatively positive numbers, don't count out the possibility of presidential intervention. Meanwhile, software, ever the bane of PCs, and that stands for prehistoric computers, of course, is blamed for problems with rolling out the Affordable Health Care Act exchanges on the web. Methinks the problem here is government, not technology. It's simple. The government can't oversee the NSA effectively, and they certainly can't oversee software contractors. In California's march towards total lunacy, Governor Jerry Brown, who's amazingly still around, drew the line at allowing illegal immigrants to serve on juries. Mind-boggling. Prairie dwellers in Colorado are fed up with gun control laws, the marijuana shops, and gay marriages going on in cosmopolitan Denver to the west. They want to secede from Colorado, and on November 11th, there will be a vote. 11 counties will decide if they want to go it alone or perhaps join up with Wyoming to the north, which shares their old-time values. And from The Guardian, America's police are looking more and more like the military. A Defense Department program transfers military-grade weapons and vehicles to local law enforcement, and that's the last thing we need. America's streets are looking more and more like a war zone. Last week, in a small county in upstate New York with a population of roughly 120,000 people, county legislators approved the receipt of a 20-ton mine-resistant ambush-protected vehicle donated by the U.S. Defense Department to the county sheriff. What on earth do you suppose they're going to do with that? It doesn't sound good. Between the armored personnel carriers locking down main streets in major American cities, mimicking our MRAPs in Afghanistan or Special Weapons and Tactics, SWAT, and Special Forces units canvassing our country, if we're not careful, this militarization of domestic policing will make over America and fast. And that's if it hasn't already. Get down on the floor with your face down, spread-eagled, and jackboot to the back of the neck and all that. Well, here's how it happened. A little-known Pentagon program has been quietly militarizing American police forces for years. A total of $4.2 billion worth of equipment has been distributed by the Defense Department to municipal law enforcement agencies with a record $546 million in 2012 alone. Additional militarization deserves congressional scrutiny as the program is harmful and must be scaled back for a number of reasons. The program is transforming our police into a military. The results of such over-militarized law enforcement are apparent from the dispersion of Occupy protesters in Oakland to the citywide lockdown in Boston. Talk about a police state. That was over the top. The result is an unlawful expansion of police force firepower that encourages the use of overwhelming and deadly force when simple, more peaceful police work would do the job. Tanks, grenade launchers, armored vehicles, and assault rifles are just a few of the items that have been transferred from military control to municipal police forces. Law enforcement agencies need only arrange and pay for shipment in order to receive the items of their choice. The article at theguardian.com has a PDF file showing actual documents. One particularly egregious example is found in South Carolina, where Richard County's sheriff acquired a tank with a 360-degree rotating machine gun turret. Now, ironically, the vehicle has been named the Peacemaker. Give us a break. Well, finally, in the global surveillance section, Ladar Levison, founder of LavaBit, has been making the media rounds. Levison shut down his company while the NSA asked him to compromise the service for all customers, saying they just wanted information for one, and that was probably Edward Snowden. Levison's lawyer was at his side as he made the rounds, and because the government has him under gag orders that prevent him from saying much of anything about the ordeal, well, he hasn't been able to say too much, but he's very brave for standing up. He's already been punished by the court, fined $20,000 here and there, and admonished and threatened with jail time. It's so wonderful to live free in America.
Yeah, well, I think it's important, just so you don't get me in trouble, I still can't confirm who the subject of the investigation was. That's the one piece of information they've kept redacted, but I can't confirm that, no. But what I can say is that what they wanted was the ability to basically listen to every piece of information coming in and out of my network. And effectively, what they needed were my SSL private keys. For those at home that don't know what SSL is, it's the little lock icon in your web browser. SSL is the technology that effectively secures all communication on the internet between websites, between mail servers. It secures instant messages, and it represents the identity of a business online. They effectively wanted that from me, a very closely guarded secret, so that they could masquerade as me or as my business on the internet and intercept all of the communications coming in. They left a business card on my door sometime in May, and then we ended up linking up via email and setting up an appointment. And they came by my office, and we sat down, and I spent a couple hours explaining to them the nature of my system and the nature of my business. Now, it's probably important to mention that, at least in May, they still didn't know who the target of the investigation was. I had pretty much forgotten about it until they came back at the end of June with their pen, trap, and trace order, which is a law that's been on the books for 40 years that allows federal law enforcement to basically put a listening device on a telephone or a network to collect meta information. It's just that in this case, the meta information that they wanted was encrypted. So they wanted to peel back the encryption on everyone's information as they were connecting to my server, just so that they could listen to this one user. But yet, at the same time, they wouldn't provide any kind of transparency back to me to assure me that they were only collecting information on one user. And I had a real problem with that. Given the sensitivity of the information that they were asking for, and given how it would harm my reputation if they ended up violating the court order, I just didn't feel it was appropriate to give them the access that they wanted. So I recruited Jesse. He's been helping me fight that request ever since.
Actually, the order unsealing the case is still at least partially under seal. But what we can say is that we had made a motion to unseal this case and to get rid of the non-disclosure obligations on Ladar over a month ago. Now that there's an appeal pending and the court has finally lifted the majority of the privacy and the sealed nature of the case, and so we can finally talk about the record of everything that Ladar did go through now. We actually still have some legal issues pending at various stages of the process, but the majority of what's going on right now is there's an appeal that will be filed by Ladar's legal team here within the next few days, outlining our position on why the actions taken by the government are both unconstitutional and violate statute. What's at stake is the privacy issues of all Americans when they deal with communications by methods like email, when there's a third party involved, like Ladar's is a third party that facilitates people's communications, and whether the Fourth Amendment protects those communications.
Jesse, I think what's important to highlight here is that what's at stake is trust. Trust on the internet.
Absolutely.
Can you trust,
yes,
when you're connected to PayPal, can you trust your browser to actually be communicating with PayPal or your bank? Or is somebody in the middle? And these private keys that they were demanding are the technological mechanism for guaranteeing that trust. And by removing our ability to protect them, they're effectively violating that, forcing us to violate that trust. I think that it's important to highlight that there are still things that I can't talk about. but that the most important thing, at least in my opinion, that I really wanted to talk about was this demand for the SSL key, and that has been unsealed. I decided very early on in this battle that I could live with turning over the keys if I could also tell people what was going on. How do you fight a law you can't tell anybody that it exists? How do you go to Congress without being able to relate what your story is and how their laws affected you? That's effectively how a democracy works. And they were handicapping it by restraining my speech. Just because of my background in information security, I took a very serious approach when I designed and architected the system to effectively minimize its vulnerabilities. I've spent a lot of time working in information technology and the financial services sector. So I was using the same types of protocols and procedures that a lot of banks use to protect information. And as a result, the information that they wanted to collect was not being passed around in unencrypted form. So there was no place for them to intercept it. And that was one of the big differentiators between, for example, my service and a lot of other services that they may or may not have approached. My system was effectively too secure to be tapped any other way.
Let me ask you about another issue. Mm-hmm. The National Security Agency, the NSA, has made repeated attempts to develop attacks against people using Tor, that's T-O-R, a popular tool designed to protect online anonymity, despite the fact the software is primarily funded and promoted by the U.S. government itself. That I'm reading from a recent Guardian piece, Ladar.
Mm-hmm. No, that's absolutely correct. Tor was sponsored originally by the U.S. government to allow people in countries like China that were firewalled off from the rest of the world to access the internet freely. And it's actually designed to resist attempts by governments to uncover the identity of whoever is using the network. And to my knowledge, the network itself has actually been able to resist any attempts by the U.S. government to uncover the identity of users. But what the government has been doing is basically following a practice of taking over websites on the Tor network and then using them, the hijacked websites, to install malware on visitors' computers, and then using that malware to submit the actual IP or location of a person back to a server in Virginia where the FBI is located. I don't necessarily have a real philosophical problem with them taking down websites that, you know, for example, promote child pornography or otherwise facilitate the trade of illegal goods and services. But I do still have a philosophical problem with their practice of remotely loading malware onto people's computers without any kind of restriction, restraint, or oversight.
Do you face imprisonment?
If I say a little bit too much, I think I still could. I think one of the big reasons I'm not in prison now is all of the media attention.
What are your plans now? Are you going to restart LavaBit? Do you feel you have to go overseas to do this?
I feel if I did go overseas, I could run the service. But I'm not ready to give up on America yet. I think I've effectively come to the decision that I'm going to wait and see how the court case plays out. If Jesse and myself end up winning, I'll be able to reopen LavaBit here in the U.S. If I lose, I will probably end up turning over the service to somebody abroad and let them run it so that I can stay here in America and I'll move on to something else.
You were willing to hand over if it was just one person, let's say it was Edward Snowden.
Mm-hmm.
What is the distinction you make?
The distinction is access. What they wanted was unrestricted, unaudited access to everyone's communications. And that was something I was uncomfortable with. And if the summer of Snowden has taught us anything, it's that we can't trust our own government with access to information they shouldn't have access to.
What are you doing now to protect yourself?
Talking to you, trying to raise money through LavaBit.com and Rally.org to help fight the case, and speaking out and hoping that somebody who has the ability to make a difference hears me.
Has other email providers come to you? Are others going to be speaking out?
I don't know. I hope so. I think the big ones are doing everything they can, but they face a number of restrictions on their speech that really prevent them from saying what's really going on, just like I faced up until recently.
Well, that's another Day Page at daypage.net. And for this time, until next time, when the page turns to another day page. I'll see you.